Welcome to this episode of SMP Stories. I'm your host, Director of Training, Ryan Coyman. And with me here today is Joe DiNaggio. Welcome, Joe.
Good morning, Ryan. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, likewise. So thanks for taking time out of your day here. You're currently on the sales side, the sales team with the Napa Eklund and Napa Temp team, correct?
Yeah, going on year, this will be the end of year 9.
Wow.
On the Napa side, yeah. Time goes fast.
And that's not even your original position with the company, is it?
No. Started with the company June 1st, 2009, right out of Northwood University. So they snatched me out of college about 2 months before graduation. That's why I'm a Seahawk. There's not many of us left anymore. We were the Florida campus. They moved everything to Michigan. But here it's nice up there. Here you got Dow Chemical and a McDonald's. So.
Absolutely. Although the weather is probably much nicer in the Florida campus.
Yeah, it was a pretty pleasant year round. So,
but yeah, so no, I started in Northwood, and you came right to SMP, right?
I did. Yeah. So, March of 2009. So I have a funny story how I got to SMP. There was two near misses actually before I got here. But I had applied for an internship back probably my sophomore year at Northwood University, studying aftermarket management, and a professor of mine knew somebody at SMP and I applied, didn't get the internship, no big deal. And then the next year, when I was about to graduate, was market crash 08. So S&P was on a hiring freeze. So I went to Apex 2008 and went to the booth. And I now, as I get older, I remember it was Ken Wendling told me, hey, we're on a hiring freeze, check back. And I said, oh, all right, this company's local to me. I'm probably not going to ever get a chance with them. And then fast forward to 2009, they had a career fair at work. At school, and the career development lady's like, hey, there's a company from your area in New York. You should go see them. I said, well, who is it? Like Standard Motor Products. I was like, they already rejected me twice. I don't know, but I'll go. And
third time's a charm.
It was great. Actually, it's exactly what it was. Ended up getting an interview. They flew me back home a week later and interview with Tom Duncan and Bruno, and yeah, it was a good time. And then a week and a half later, I get a phone call. I had cut class that day because it was my girlfriend was in town. Who's on
the
my
truth wife. Comes out now.
Huh? Yeah. And, I was at the Palm Beach Zoo. And I get a phone call and I got all excited. And I there was a lot of noise in the background. It's still I was told it was one of the funnier HR calls ever had to be made. So, but no, I started June 1st of 09, about a week after I graduated, which was great.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean that's an amazing story to come from a student to walk into. Yeah. Right into corporate headquarters, right?
Yeah, no, it was pretty incredible considering the time too that with the way the economy was and the world was. I've considered myself really lucky. I got a lot of good opportunities. Northwood put up a good base. I studied aftermarket management, so I grew up around the industry. So to me, it's something I always wanted to do. So to get that opportunity, especially with a company in New York, which there isn't a lot of aftermarket companies based out of New York, so that was kind of threading the needle right there. But it worked out great. Started as a product specialist, which was just at the time, just kind of learning the company, learning some product lines, and very quickly, within about 2-3 months, I was asked to become a full-blown product manager. Did that, managed a few different product lines, kind of got known as the guy who was fixing some staggering lines or lines that weren't doing that great, was building them back up. And then, from there, got about 12 months after that, got the opportunity for TechSmart, which was, I guess, where I really cut my teeth. I learned a lot about the company.
Yeah, no, for sure. I remember that. Do you remember the first time we actually met in person?
Yeah, Vision Show.
Absolutely, yeah.
Vision Show, yeah. I was
a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed kid ready to set the world on fire. And
It was before we even launched TechSmart. I remember 2010, we were told, hey, look, it hasn't officially launched yet. I think Vision Show was like early March.
Yeah,
we were going to launch in April. Like, hey, you can talk about it, but don't talk a lot about it. But it was great. Started with, I'll never forget, 109 parts. That's exactly what we started that line with. When I took over, it was a name, and I worked with a lot of really great people. TechSmart was, in the beginning, was really 4 or 5 people. It was Kenny Brown in Virginia. Shout out to Kenny Brown, our buyer. And then Jay Eckstein, Rob Watson, Morris Lamb, and myself were kind of the, early guys with TechSmart. I did the product side and the, wrote a lot of the copy, and obviously the marketing department did a phenomenal job there with everything else. And then Kenny was a rock star, getting our parts ordered and making sure everything got there on time and keeping me in line usually.
Some days might be a bigger task than anything there. But.
Yeah, well, those that know me know that, you know, so, yeah, I need a little guidance, but everyone does, right?
You're a passionate guy, and it's something that can't be taught.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
So you went from the product side out into the sales field. So I'm guessing that some of the experience has really benefited your current role, right? Or vice versa.
You know, absolutely. It's definitely given me a lot of credibility on the street. You know, I tell people I came from the inside, from product development. You know, I was very blessed to have a lot of great mentors inside, and a lot of people from different parts of SMP who really helped guide me. When we did this, there was no like script on how to start a brand. And so I got to work with a lot of different departments, and, you know, engineering and purchasing and operations and legal in some case, sometimes, you know, just all that. And then, so that gave me a lot of good groundwork when I got out in the field to go out there and understand it. But, you know, 90% of sales is relationship management. And so that was where I felt my strongest suit was. And that really kind of helped me really do well with the Napa team, especially early on. And I had worked with some of those guys on different projects. You know, I'd spent about 8 months before I went on to the Napa team in the product marketing manager role. And I'd really bounced around the country, helping promote, you know, TPMS and Intermotor and TechSmart and TechExpert. And so I knew a lot of the guys before I got into it, so which was great.
So explain a little bit about the Napa sales team to us. For those that don't know, we have multiple sales teams here. We've got a team that calls on the traditional warehouse distributor or the jobbers. And then we've also got a team that focuses on O'Reilly Auto Parts. And we've got a team that focuses on AutoZone. And then Joe is part of the Napa team. So describe a little bit about that team layout and how you guys operate, because it is different than some of the other ones.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when I started, I was, I guess, lucky number 7. So there really wasn't a lot of Eklund guys. It started, I believe, at 4, and then eventually expanded to 6. And then I was the 7th in 2015. And we added an 8th. So right now we got eight guys for the United States. We have our buddy Steve Hool up in Canada. And then we have two different brand managers, and Chris Lord on the temp side and Eric Gonzalez on the engine side. And obviously Stephen Ponticelli, the Pont himself, leads that team. So it is unique in that we're considered zone managers in SMP speak. We don't have any necessarily direct reports. The way Napa works is there's 57 DCs now throughout the country, and they have their own sales teams, and we have sort of like a sales rep role with them, where we there's some deal made where they're supposed to represent our product. And they have had an evolution in the way that they have structured their organization. So it's made it, you know, like anything, more and more challenging as the years go on, but we have a pretty large footprint, but there's only, like I said, 8 of us for the United States. So it's a relatively small team considering how big the customer is. I mean, my territory, I have the Eastern Division for Napa. So I have 8 of the 9 DCs, about 730 or so Napa stores. So it's a pretty 11 states, I think I'm up to. Wow. Yeah, it's a pretty big territory. A lot of business, a lot of great customers. And Napa is unique in that a lot of people think, you know, that it is like the bigger retail, big box retailer guys. It is predominantly independently owned. It's about roughly 6,000 stores, about 5,000 are independently owned, 1,000 company stores. And that always changes and back and forth and whatnot. But yeah, so very unique structure. The term that a lot of the jobbers use is locally owned, nationally known. But yeah, that in itself, in that structure, presents some, you know, opportunities, but also challenges, you know, but it's great. You know, it's really great to see a lot of small business owners get to work with those people. And you're supporting not only a big company like Napa, but you're also supporting a lot of people who are, you know, you're helping them put food on their table for their kids and, you know, sponsor the local sports team. So there's a lot to be said. And that is really nice working with that customer set. So,
yeah, that is a very unique blend. And you know, out of that great eight that you mentioned there, the Ponce team, I'd be remiss to not give a shout out to Jerry Chapman, you know, one of your teammates there.
Yeah, absolutely.
This whole S&P story thing was really Jerry's brainchild. So kudos to Jerry being the innovator he is and coming up with this idea here. But
we're a creative bunch.
Yeah. And it sounds like you have to be with covering 11 states and that many independent owners, you know, because each independent has their own wish, their own goals, their own thoughts, their own way of doing business. And absolutely. So you've kind of got to be all things to all people, right?
Yeah. I mean, even HDC kind of operates entirely differently, you know, so everyone has their own focus and some are more focused, sales focused, some more operations focused. You know, there is a mix of that too. And then you have, you know, a sales manager that manages the independently owned stores. That's kind of their lane they have to stay in. And then you have a district manager, which manages the company owned stores. So, you know, there's obviously different pricing structures there too. And so that's always interesting. Just again, just navigating those unique circumstances with Napa, but it is a great customer. Obviously, I believe it's the most recognized aftermarket logo in the world. At least that's what they tell us. So,
well, it's back to that locally owned, nationally known.
Absolutely.
Statement, right. Absolutely. And that is, again, just very unique. And really, it's mind boggling to think that, you know, 5 out of 6 stores are going to be independently owned with that. And I know for a long time, that was kind of their goal, is to help support and promote the independent store owner. And I myself have been a benefactor of some of those programs in my previous life here. And so, you know, it is a very interesting organization. It's different, like you said, from the retailers. It's probably a little more on the traditional side there.
Yeah, I know. And then you obviously have the Napa Auto Care Center network, which is great. You know, getting to work with a lot of those folks. That's really the top supporters of Napa. You know, those are the guys you really want to support in your brand. So when we're out there promoting, those are the first guys you'd like to hit. Because, you know, if you're not getting their business, that's tough to have a good year. But, you know, typically, you know, Eklund's got a great brand name. Eklund will be, I don't know, an extra 100 years old. So officially, Jack and Earl Eklund started the company in San Francisco, California. That's why the bear is there, and it's going to be 100-year-old. So it carries a lot of weight. So, you know, really does carry a lot of weight in the aftermarket. It's been around for a long time. Napa is going to celebrate its 100th anniversary in 2025, which is going to be, I think, a real fun Napa Expo that they do every 5 years. So,
no, that's awesome. And yeah, as you mentioned with the auto care centers, I believe they changed that up a little bit more recently too. And so that's kind of an elite group within their own piece. Like, they've got the Napa Gold recognized auto care centers that you kind of have to qualify for. And so it's
100%. I mean, you need ASC certified technicians. It's not just, you know, hey, we're going to, you know, give you a sign and you're going to, you know, stay, you know, nail a tin sign out to the front of your building and buy no parts from us. You know, there is obviously requirements, not only from a purchasing standpoint, but more importantly from the quality of technician, you know, how clean their showroom is, you know, signage and displays, you know, trying to really make a customer friendly experience too, as far as the end user. You know, I will say this, I think a lot of dealerships have changed the game in the aftermarket for us. They kind of set the bar higher and expectations, customers going out of lease vehicles and leaving dealerships, going to independent repair shops. And so there is that kind of evolution in our market here. You know, just it's changing, you know, in a good way.
Absolutely. No, back in the days when I had the shop prior to S&P, you know, we looked to differentiate ourselves from everybody else in town. There were
absolutely
5 shops in town, and 4 of them had an AC Delco sign and stuff like that in the front window. And we're like, no, we're not going to hang that because customers don't know the difference then, right?
No, absolutely.
We need to stand out and we need to stand ahead. And I think that's what the Gold Auto Care Center program kind of does.
Absolutely.
Recognize some of those top
shops. It does carry a lot of weight, you know, as far as, you know, locally, you know,
in
different towns.
Yeah. So, I know there's no such thing as a typical day in your world, and I'm glad I caught you here today where you had an office day. But what does a typical day look like?
Well, you know, it really does vary. There is no really typical day with as big of a territory as it is. You know, I try to set office time. That's one thing as I've gotten older and I've learned that you got to have office time because data analytics are very important to what we do. You know, as we've gotten more and more tools to work and do that, you know, a typical office day might be, you know, looking at customer inventories, you know, looking at things like you know, where are their opportunities, where are their holes? And that's the biggest thing. And you talk about with the amount of parts proliferation now today, there's just one, a lot of options for every category. You know, we have a lot of smaller ankle biters, as we like to call them, right? Trying to come after our business. You know, we are kind of the gold standard as far as coverage and whatnot. But, you know, a lot of that is, you know, we talk to our jobbers and say, hey, look, I can help you. I can look at your inventory. And that's typically what I do, is I'll look for opportunities with jobber inventories. I'll do duplication reviews for them. I'll say, hey, look, you're stocking the same part 5 times. I can help a jobber save money. Even if they're sending back 2 of the 3 other competitors and they're reinvesting it in their business, if they're healthy, that helps us. So that's what I try to focus on a typical office day, is really data analytics, looking at customer inventories and trying to help drive that. And again, a lot of it isn't necessarily hard selling. It's, you know, maybe having a phone call or a Zoom meeting and just kind of reviewing things. Napa has, I spent a lot of time with their territory sales managers. Those are the representatives from the distribution center to the independent jobbers who are actually helping them put the inventory in. So a lot of work with those guys. So that'd be a typical office day. But on a travel day, as you know, it could be a lot of windshield time. I listened to Chris's SFP stories with you right before this. I listened to it yesterday. And, you know, he's correct. It is a lot of windshield time. Even, you know, sometimes you're flying and, you know, the funs and joys of an airport where you're delayed, especially with JFK and LaGuardia and New York. But, you know, a lot of windshield time, a lot of visiting shops. You know, we really are the PR department for Standard Motor Products. We are really the representatives of this company outwardly in front of the independent repair shops. And so my job is a lot of training, not only to the people at the store level, counter people, teaching them about our products, because in the end of the day, they're the touch point between that independent repair shop and us. So a lot of that's training, you know, product knowledge, product awareness. I love doing clinics when I can, doing classes. As you can tell, I like to talk, so that's always fun. But yeah, it's a very varied day. Visiting DCs, a lot of times you're visiting with DC management. Again, strategizing, coming up with, you know, where do we need to focus on? You know, who are the either independent owners? What are the company-owned stores we need to focus on? What are the competitors that have come in the market that we need to go on? So especially when you're on the road, it's really, really varied. I've always said that one of my goals is to start a podcast where we just talk about tales from the road, because outside of the work day, I mean, even just in your travels, you meet so many people and so many situations that it could be a whole podcast unto itself.
Except for we'd have to change the names to protect the guilty.
Absolutely. I mean, just you think about it, when you're living your life on the road, there is really no script for it, right?
No. And stuff happens. And when you think you've seen it all, you get hit with a new one. I had 2 of them last week that I couldn't have even dreamt up. And we'll save those for another time. But I think I'm going to write these in a book. So when I'm done with my career, then I can publish the book. But in the meantime, it's
I always thought it should be called Death of a Salesman, just because, you know, that whole Arthur Miller play was about the alternate reality that he was creating. Well, that's kind of like sales, right? There's this alternate reality that, you know, all this wacky stuff happens. And
well, then you mix that in with a little bit of Tommy Boy.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Some planes, trains, and automobiles. And absolutely. You get a pretty good picture of what a typical day might look like.
Absolutely.
So, you know, in your previous role here, you had a lot of internal interaction. Now that you're outside, you know, what is this? Who do you interact with from the company? And, you know, in what capacity do you interact with those people?
Yeah, so obviously coming from the inside, I try to maintain as many of those relationships as possible. That's benefited me greatly. I try to also be the beacon for our team too. If there's a touch point that maybe they're not familiar with, but you know, I work a lot with customer service. Again, shout out to Victoria and Lou, who always take care of us.
True rock stars.
And really all the customer service people, the buyers, everyone in Virginia who really take care of us. But yeah, deal with a lot of customer service. Also, you know, on the product side, you know, John, Pat, and their teams right there. Again, trying to maintain those relationships. They really are important. You know, coming from this side now and coming from that side before, you know, he's it's just the sales guys calling in with complaints. They've only got complaints. But you know, now I see both sides of it. So I try to be, you know, help where I can. So if I can help them, maybe make an improvement somewhere or give them an idea, it's a very big part of our life in the sales force, because we have to really be that, hey, I found this out, or hey, this kept popping up, you know, good or bad or otherwise, or hey, we need to get into this product category. So I really try to work with the product department as much as I can, you know, and obviously still with marketing too, you know, Rob, Aaron, Jay, the whole team there, you know, anytime we can help them out, give them ideas there too. So it is a really varied, varied bit of people I get to still work with, which is great.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, I've heard positive things from them too, that they appreciate the Joe DiNaggio feedback from the streets as well. So
oh, good. Okay, good.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that it was kind of a homecoming to come back to work for Standard. So you're a New York guy. Tell us a little bit about your story and, you know, what makes Joe?
Yeah. So, born and raised in Flushing, Queens, huge Met fan. It was part, big part of my DNA growing up, blue and orange, but, born and raised in Flushing, Queens. My dad's been in the business my whole life. So my dad was a spin service writer at various GM and Cadillac dealerships, particularly my entire life. So I remember growing up, he'd manage the Saturday shift at the service department at Champion Cadillac in Yonkers, New York. And I'd be sitting in the break room watching, you know, cartoons on the TV, or I'd go grab an ice cream cone out of the vending machine and go watch guys fix cars, you know, sit on somebody's toolbox. And I think that's where I caught the bug early. My dad's not a car guy, which is hilarious. He got in it, you know, it was a second job. He was a lot attendant for a car dealership. And then he was very personable. And they said, hey, you want to be a service writer? And then he took off from there. He's been top tiered GM. Really awesome. Service writing his whole life. So it kind of gave me a good basis in customer service. And, you know, he always told me you got to lay your head in the pillow every night and make sure you treat the customer right, and that'll help you sleep better. So, you know, I had that good basis there. You know, again, that kind of drove me to want to get into the business, you know, reading car magazines, and I, you know, went through my phase of JDM cars in high school and wanting to own Supras like everyone else and things like that. And then I got into my muscle car phase in college, and, you know, going to Northwood, that was a big part of my life. It was really great to get a lot of exposure in the industry. So I got to, again, I got a lot of unique experiences. And then living in New York is unique in itself, right? It kind of gives you a perspective. Right. You're surrounded by a lot of diversity, which is great. You know, getting experience things like great food and all, yep, that. So I'm a big foodie. You know, I love traveling, you know, not just for work, but obviously personal. Yeah. That's a big part of who I am.
And you travel with family, right? I know, yeah, that's part of your life too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I met my now wife. I met her in junior year of high school. So high school sweetheart. I went away to Northwood in Florida. She stayed up here in New York. We stayed together, did the long distance thing for 4 years, and then got back and started our careers. And she actually, fun fact, she started S&P. She worked for S&P for a couple of years, working for Andy Elish in product and demand planning. I one time saw Larry, and he thought it was an S&P thing. And I said, no, I'm sorry to burst your bubble, but it was before S&P.
Although, you know what? We've had a few couples or matches made, yeah, in sales training when we brought people into Texas. And,
oh, there you go. That's pretty cool.
You know, one couple is stay in touch with and still married 12 years later.
Nice.
Couple children.
Great.
So,
yeah,
it's here.
Yeah, no, it's fun. I have one son, JJ. He's my little guy, my mini me. Sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes it's a bad thing. But he's 6.5 years old. We just, you know, he's a kid. He loves cars. He watches me tinker. I'll tinker on my little outboard on my boat and things like that. And he'll, hey, can I come help? And, you know, I'm go over, my neighbor's got a lift in his garage, so he's always working on a car, so he wants to come over and watch it. So yeah, that's now it's kind of spreading, the car bug is spreading to JJ, but that's a good thing. So, but yeah, now I live in Long Island, New York, in Massapequa, so it's kind of cool. It's like being on vacation compared to living in New York City, you know, living on the South Shore here. But yeah, it is nice, you know, you live in New York City your whole life. It's a really, obviously, a big city, a big town. You know, a lot of changing, a lot of things, moving pieces. You don't always know your neighbors because they're always ever changing. And it's nice, right, to have moved out here to the suburbs, and, you know, I got a great block, great neighbors. So it's nice. So that's who I am. You know, I have a lot of hobbies like everyone else, you know, guitar and play so pitch softball on Sundays, and so try to keep myself active outside of work.
Yeah, well, it goes along with that foodie thing, right? I'm much of a foodie like yourself, and that's part of the joys of travel is you get to experience new things and try things. But being in New York, there's no shortage of options either.
No. I read one time that Queens is actually the most culturally diverse place per square mile in the world, which makes sense. I believe it's over 170 countries represented. So it was a big change moving out here to Long Island. There wasn't as much options, so. Still make that trek into Queens, visit my old stomping grounds, head down to Flushing Main Street, get some fantastic food down there. And yeah, no, food is definitely a big part of meeting people, right? And so whether you're taking a customer out to lunch or, you know, I always say, hey, take me to where you go. Don't take me to Applebee's or Chili's. No offense to those guys. But
yes, exactly.
I want the local thing.
With my family travels too, and even work travels, the general rule of thumb is, don't go somewhere where we try at home.
Absolutely.
It's going to be a unique place to the region. It's awesome. You mentioned playing a little bit of guitar, a lot of windshield time. So what artists are you currently listening to?
I've been on a real Luke Combs kicks.
Okay.
Kick lately. I've been
a little Fast Car.
Yeah, Fast Car is a good one, right? The old Tracy Chapman cover. But I got asked to play Beautiful Crazy at my cousin's wedding last year, so that was cool. It was the first time I performed in front of anybody in about 15 years.
Awesome.
So I learned that. I've been learning Life Goes On the last couple of days. So, you know, yeah, just on a Luke Combs kick. He's great acoustic music, kind of relaxed. I went through my metal phase, but lately it's been a lot of Luke Combs. So
awesome. No, and like you said, with as much time as you spend in the car, probably opportunity to hear plenty of different things at the same time.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, there's always those days where we put our feet up on the desk and you stare out the window and go, you know what, if I could do something different, what does that look like in your mind? Like, what is the dream job? Can be inside the company or outside the company, you know, the open up the DiNaggio hot dog stand or performance cars or what does that look like?
Yeah, it's funny. I put a lot of thought into this. We had kind of mentioned that was going to something you'd ask, and it really is a lot of stuff I've thought about wanting to do. You know, I used to joke around with Phil Hutchins. I used to tell him, I want your job one day. What do I need to do to get there? But I understand now as I'm older and wiser that that's a lot of responsibility there. So I don't know if I necessarily need that, but you know, I think there's a lot of exciting parts of our company, especially with a lot of the acquisitions that we've made, a lot of the people we brought in, you know, getting a chance to interact with a lot of them in different capacities. I just think there's a lot of opportunities, you know, for either new product categories, maybe even like the mergers and acquisitions team. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that, finding those really good fits and pieces and, you know, in that aspect, you're selling S&P to other people, right? You're trying to say, hey, we would be a good fit for you. And so I thought, oh, that was an interesting thing. You know, it's a whole nother avenue, a different perspective, maybe giving some more perspective from the sales inside on how to apply that to the street. You know, but outside of the company, you know, like I said, I want to definitely start a podcast one day. I think I love talking, I love meeting people and hearing about other people's stories. And that was always something that'd be a lot of fun. And eventually I'd like to settle down, go back down south to Florida and maybe like run a fishing charter on the West Coast, just getting to relax, enjoy what I, you know, relaxing and working at the same time like that. So,
yep. Awesome. And helping other people have fun or enjoy their day.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I'm definitely of that personality type where I find joy in other people's joy. And if I'm
absolutely
with people and they're having a good time, it makes me feel good.
Yeah, I don't know how somebody could go fishing with Joe and not have fun. So,
Well, you might not catch fish from personal experience, but at least we'll have a good time doing it.
That's why it's called fishing, not catching.
Somebody absolutely. Before, so. We waste a lot of gas and have a good time, but you know, it'll be good. Melt a lot of ice. That's about it.
It'd be memorable, and they could probably tell a few stories afterwards too.
Oh, definitely. There's always good stories.
So any personal goals or achievements along the way that you'd be willing to share with the audience here?
Oh, personal goals or achievements. I feel like, you know, I've been doing this for 9 years now, and I've got a lot of experience doing this, and you know, I don't know what's next just yet. I think everyone, you know, there's so many opportunities, so many avenues you can go down, but I definitely want to just mainly make an impact, you know, on other people. You know, one of the things I thought about is mentoring one day. I was very fortunate to have a lot of mentors when I started. Some of them, I'd forced them to become a mentor. You know, I'm sure Jay Eckstein will tell you I was in his office every day for a long time. And Jay, I consider a mentor, you know, for a lot of things. So, you know, I would like to be that to somebody else at S&P one day. I feel like I was afforded that. And, you know, that's definitely something I'd love to do is help other people out, whether they get into the sales force, whether people on the product side who want to come out and experience the field. Open invitation if you're locally in the area and you want to come visit some customers and get a feel for it. As long as your manager says it's okay. You know, you can definitely come rap at me for a day. But yeah,
I think you've got a lot to offer to even HR or, you know, anybody that's trying to understand more about the company. You know, you've got that unique blend of experience and easy guy to get along with. And, you know, that's very important with this stuff. So, yeah, that's one of the cool things about having great mentors. And then the ultimate reward is turning around and having the opportunity to mentor others and kind of pass along the opportunities that have been afforded to you.
Yeah, no, and I've always come from the mindset, and you know, my dad always said, a good man knows what he doesn't know. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to know a lot of things, but and I always used to say to my customers, I said, if I don't know it, I got a guy. A good New Yorker always got a guy.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, and again, as you're a representative out there, you've got the whole team of people behind you, whether it be the product team, the marketing team, training, you know, internal engineering, whatever. You know, you've got all that stuff that's coming into that business with you. And you're the talking piece of it and representing it. But, you know, that's what's awesome about Stan Motor Products is just the team working behind the scenes.
No, definitely. And really, you know, I spent a lot of time, you know, trying to just understand people's perspectives and, you know, somebody's not happy or upset, trying to understand why, you know, not trying to take a defensive position, but really open-mindedness. And that's the biggest thing I guess I could say to anybody listening, and the people who are newer in the company or whatnot, or I guess people even with experience, is be open-minded. You know, you'll learn a lot from other people if you listen. Don't feel like you're owed anything, because your time here, you have to earn everything, you know?
Good, good. Any final thoughts to pass along to the audience as we wrap up our time here together today?
Yeah, just we work for a very unique company. I think I talked to a lot of people elsewhere, and I think I'm very lucky who we work for. And I think, you know, more than anything, like I said, just be open-minded, listen. You know, if you're newer in the company, listen to the people who've done it before you. And if you've been with the company a while, listen to the new people, because they might give you a different perspective.
Yep, absolutely. I'm sure you've seen that coming into the sales force for sure, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we've been fortunate to get some great guys on the sales team in the last few years, and guys like Gary and Jeff who came from, you know, Gary came from the standard side and Jeff came from outside the company, but in the sales world. And, you know, everyone kind of lends their unique perspective. You know, that's the whole thing. It's a melting pot out here in the sales world of different experiences and locations and people from different walks of life and backgrounds. And so it's really cool to be in this role. And to really make a lot of lifelong friends, not only within the company, but a lot of customers have become friends. So that's cool.
Absolutely. And that's very important. It's true testimony to who Joe DiNaggio is in my observation here. So
thank you. I'm not going to be able to fit my head out the door if you keep ego like this.
we'll let it settle down. Maybe you can get one of those big Napa hats that we've seen on the top of the trucks.
Definitely.
Maybe wear one of those.
That's big now, right? The giant hats in the NFL.
Exactly. Well, Joe, thanks for taking the time to share your S&P story with us here today. And for the rest of the audience, stay tuned. We'll be coming back at you in a few weeks with another great story. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Ryan. Really appreciate the opportunity.
S&P Stories.